Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Welcome to Music Sunday Service. We have with us today a big choir and orchestra, and the focus is going to be on music today, and I hope that you all feel it in you and enjoy it very much. And as we usually do, we're going to start with singing, but because there's going to be so much music, we're going to try something a little bit different. This will be just a little confusing, but I think it'll be really fun. We're going to alternate two hymns. So we're going to sing Alleluia, 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 that hymn. And then we're going to go directly into Now Let Us Sing. And we'll do this three times. So if you want to get out your hymnal, it's in there. It's 367 and 368. They're on facing pages, so you can just open it up. Or you'll be able to see the words right up on the screen. And the choir will be singing from up there, and you'll hear it. So even if it goes wrong, have fun.
Ready?
Yes.
May your life be as a song.
May your life be as a song.
Resounding with the dawn to sing awake the night.
Resounding with the dawn to sing awake the night.
Then softly serenade the stars.
Then softly serenade.
Ever dancing circles in the night.
Ever dancing circles in the night.
Today we're going to sing a song for Earth Day, which was yesterday. Sagan, what principle are we looking at when we are singing this today?
We believe in caring for our planet Earth, the home we share with all living things.
Raise your hand if you were able to participate in the March for Science yesterday. Woo! All right. blessing this pretty planet for you. Ready, guys? Let's get a little closer to the mic. There we go.
This pretty planet, spinning through space, our garden, our harbor, our holy place. Golden sun going down, gentle blue giants spin us around all through the night, safe till the morning light. This pretty planet,
I'd like to invite all those young or young at heart to come down here in this place right in the center for just a minute, and you get to meet an orchestra. This is good. You can right in. Come right on. Come on down right in here. We're going to meet the orchestra today because we have an orchestra. An orchestra is a bunch of different instruments which gets together and make music, and there are all kinds of different orchestras. And this one today is mostly an orchestra of string players, but we have some others. And I wanted you all to get just a little chance to hear what they do. So I'm going to ask one of our violinists to stand up and play just a little bit on the violin so you hear what a violin. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
And then just a little bit bigger than a violin is a viola. So if you look over here, now you get to hear a viola, which has a little bit of a lower sound. Isn't that beautiful? And then the lowest one of the next is the cello. And the cello has the deepest tones, except for there's one bigger cello. But this is the primary sort of voice in the orchestra. Beautiful. And then we also have some wind instruments. So if you turn back over to this side, we have a clarinet. Nine, and so on. That's right. Do you want to do it? And then we have a brass instrument. This is the trombone. There are different kinds of trombones, and this one's a tenor trombone. And we have one other kind of instrument. It's a percussion instrument, and this one is called the timpani, which is really big drums. That's like a giant, right? And then there's a thing which the orchestra has to do, which we want to be really quiet at the moment, and they're all going to tune, and the organ is going to give them an A, and then they're all going to tune to the A, and they're going to tune in different parts. So some of them will tune first, and then the others. this is something that the orchestra does so that they all become connected and understand the sort of center of musical gravity for everybody. And now it's time to go off to your class to stand them as the kids go out to the classes. Thank you. Would you put an F for me? An F. Sing and rejoice, sing and rejoice. Mozart. Why do we care what Mozart did? He lived a long time ago. But his music has continued to speak to people for hundreds of years and to be deeply meaningful and sustaining and uplifting and just delightful in so many ways. There's a wonderful clarity about Mozart. He was not always regarded as a supreme composer. He was looked upon as sort of a sweet little Rococo composer, sort of a second-rate Mozart or Haydn, pretty little sounds. And this was a misunderstanding during much of the Romantic era before they discovered the wealth of emotion and the wonderful, the sort of divine clarity in his music. He started off when he was young. He was an incredible musical prodigy, and he was toured around Europe playing for the princely folk, and they would give him tokens of their esteem, which sometimes were very valuable. And as he grew up and he was moving towards 20, came about the time when he should be getting an appointment at a princely court, which is what musicians longed to do in those days so that they had gainful employment. But there was something about Mozart's personality, that incredible genius, which rubbed some people the wrong way, and so he didn't find a job that satisfied him. So he moved to Vienna and he did his own thing. He was sort of a freelance musician, and he did great for about 10 years. And then things began to fall off, and his music was no longer popular, and his concerts not so well attended. During the high time, all his operas, and he was a great opera composer, were performed at the best theaters in Europe. But towards the end, he was struggling to make a living, and his last opera, The Magic Flute, was performed at the equivalent of a vaudeville theater. And he really was looking for any kind of work, especially a commission to write a piece. And he became ill, working so hard to get things going, but he still had to keep showing up every night to the theater to lead the opera production. And he got a commission to write a requiem from an unknown noble person, an anonymous person. And it's a very strange thing to write a requiem. He hadn't written anything sacred for about 15 years. And he was a man of the world. He went to church, but he was very much a man of the world. And here he was sick, and he probably knew at that point that he was dying. He was that sick. And here to write a requiem. And anytime someone composes a requiem, they're thinking about humanity, about everyone they've lost. And he had lost children, including his firstborn. And then about himself, because he was essentially writing a requiem for himself. And in the end, he wrote a requiem for all humanity. And he didn't finish this work. If you've seen the movie Amadeus, there's this great scene where he's in bed and Salieri is there writing down. That didn't happen. It's a very nice story. But actually, Mozart was pretty much bedridden and ill when he was writing this, and he sketched out parts. But his genius was such that he would write the beginning and he would say, well, the rest is obvious. And so just do what it's, well, obvious to him. And so for a number of years, it was not completed until finally a student of his, after Mozart had died, a student of his named Süssmayr, who recognized that he was not a genius like Mozart, did his best to complete the work. He knew Mozart fairly well from having taken lessons from him. So he did his best to complete the work without sort of trying to put his own stamp on it. The movements you're going to hear today are almost exclusively by Mozart, and they are music which, if you let them, I think will deeply speak to you. When a composer writes a requiem, there are a lot of expectations, that there will be a fugue, that there will be serious, sacred, liturgical style music. He did all that, but he carried it beyond any sense of being stilted or stuffy. We're going to start with the opening portion of Mozart's requiem.
Thank you. Welcome, welcome. It is so good to see you all here today. My name is Bridget Edding, and once upon a time, I came to this church 4 years ago. I was 6 years into a really impressive heartbreak, and I was very, 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 very tired. I knew that I needed a church and a choir. I had actually never heard our choir before. I just loved the music that I heard at the early service, and so I hoped it would be a good fit, cleared my Thursday evening schedule, and showed up. I knew I needed to sing. I had no idea what I was in for. It was February 21st, 2013, and in the next 8 weeks, I sang with the choir at two ordinations. There was a death, so I got to learn some Brahms that I'd never learned before, and then I got to learn the full St. Cecilia's Mass by Gounod. So in 8 weeks, I performed all of these things, and my attitude was, I'm going to do this. So it was sort of like a white-knuckly type of a thing because I was so tired and heartbroken. Halfway through the St. Cecilia Mass, all of a sudden it went from white-knuckling it to, well, hello, wow, okay, I love this. I really, really want to do this. And I felt an opening and I felt energy that I hadn't felt in a very long time. So 3 years went by and our relationship was going well, myself and the choir. And Brian introduced us to Poulenc's Gloria, at which point I decided I was ready to get married because that, I loved that piece. And a lot of other people didn't, but I was ready for a difficult relationship. And so the Poulenc made me realize that it was time for me to lean in to choral singing, at which point that summer I sang Mahler's Eighth. And then this January I sang the Verdi Requiem. And when I was in that choir and I heard Brian say, no more, I want more, I was like, I'm in, I'm in, I'm in. So here we are 4 years later. I had no idea that my heart could be so mended by music. Apparently it takes an entire choir and an orchestra to call my heart back. So many thanks to the UCB choir.
Thank you.
There is nothing you need to do right now. You can just sit, open your heart, find a deep place inside. Feel the connection with all the people around you. Find some kernel of goodness and wholeness and peace, and let it blossom. I wish that your life may be like a song, filling a dancing sky with light and sound, and that there's always a song in your heart, bringing you joy or comfort, delight, bringing you whatever you need. Lynn Cahoon writes, a shout out to the intrepid planters, the Chalice Circle, Catherine Gavsey, Don Close, Hillary Lorraine, Joe Maxson, and Bob Moore. Check it out. David Lingenfelter and Anne Wardell marking the wheel of life with the passing of David's Aunt Mary and the birth of their first grandchild, Carl Silva, to Aliana and DeSucio. Wishing peace to my Aunt Catherine as she journeys to the end of life. And Ellie Oxman asking for good thoughts and prayers for my good friend Leslie, who found out this week that she has breast cancer. Also blessings to a high school friend, Mark, who passed away last week. I hope that your life is filled with song and that your friends sing along. I hope your life is filled with love and that the sun is shining for you. And I hope music is a part of your life and that it brings you joy and consolation, comfort and delight, and that it opens your heart more than you knew it could be opened.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Schmidt, and I'd like to share with you a poem that I wrote inspired by my life with music and my experiences here especially. From Many, One. The child whose first rhythm was the pulse of her mother's heart is born into this singing world filled with the dawn songs of doves, tone poems of dancing trees, rhapsodies of rains, overtures of oceans, and silent symphonies of stars. Her mother sings to her lullabies of love and longing, talismans of protection. The child is at one with her world, safe in the Eden of her mother's arms, where yet there is no self and no other. When she can barely walk, she steps up onto her father's big feet, hugs his legs, and dances with him. He reads to her, unlocking poetry and rhythm in the cadence of old rhymes worn true by the voices of generations. Already she has tasted the fruit of self-consciousness, but the ache of losing Eden is tempered by the heady rush of independence and the wonder of coming to know others. For if you are not me and we are not one, then you are you and you are beautiful. In blessing at table, around the fire and down the road, the child is held and upheld by voices weaving together and lifts her own voice gladly. Later at school, there was more singing and then the recorder and finally the flute, a clear, expressive voice to be won for her own. Now the door is opened to the wealth of written music, stories locked in coded coffers, unsprung runes, enchanted princesses. For though that small sonata has been played 1,000 times, both well and badly, for her it is the sleeping virgin, and for it she is the prince. In this world, filled with the dawn songs of doves and the silent symphonies of stars, how can we keep from singing? Brimming with wonder, loss, longing, and joy, we overflow music from one full heart, given voice by another, passed soul to soul, our joined voices harmonious, a pluribus unum, from many one. So Eden calls us home.
Thank you.
invite you all to find a hand to hold on to and remind yourself again that we're all deeply interconnected. And I wish for all of you that your life feels filled with song, song that opens your heart more than you realize it can be opened. We complete our service and carry the energy of our music and our time together out into the world. And we will listen to Katja play a glorious postlude, or you can go out and drink some glorious coffee, as you prefer. May your life be as a song.